Oh, hello. Oh. So, Christian, are you going to use the mic? I think you're going to be doing a bit of talking, aren't you? So, Christian, you know, thank you for joining us at Guadec this year. So, you know, nice, easy question to start off with. What's your 60-second pitch for Wayland?
Well, that's a hard question. Is this working?
Is that better? Yeah, that's better. So, yeah, that's a common question, and it's one that's always hard to answer, but... I think the key idea is that if you look at the way most modern users of X use X today, is in that they don't actually use X. We have a compositor that's responsible for presenting everything on the screen, and we have clients that really just want to push their content to the compositor, and finally we have input going into the X server, which really don't know which window it should be going to, In the middle, there's the X server sitting there trying to talk to clients and talk to a compositor with an external process. But what we really want to build today is a compositor that talks directly to the clients and not have any middleman that sits there and doesn't do anything. So it's a big part of the idea is to just cut out this big old middleman and get a straight path from clients to compositor. And we get a lot of small benefits from this and big benefits in the process. And But the basic idea is that if we look at the system we have today, and if we were to design a graphic stack to support that user experience, there's just no way we would end up with an X server in there today.
Okay, thank you. A little bit more than 60 seconds, but that's good, very good, very good. So you know, the way the format of this works, I have a few questions prepared, but if at any time, you know, I want you to think up some questions to think and to ask for Christian, myself, Rob and Owen. So if you do have any questions, please just make yourself visible. Or we won't be having questions at the end. So whilst Christian gets his mic all sorted, he can think about my next question, which is, you know, okay, don't put my feet there. So do you see Wayland as a direct competitor to X11? You know, and what do you see as its key advantages?
Well, I think it is a competitor to X in many use cases, but I mean you can't state it like that. You can't say is Wayland competing with X, because there are two different display systems. But if you look at a use case like GNOME Shell, then yes, we could definitely use X and we could use Wayland, and there is a comparison we can make there. If you're using TWM on your desktop, you're happy with TWM and Xterm, there's no reason you should switch to Wayland, and we can improve that situation for that user. If you're building a new system for automotive entertainment in your car, then if you're building a clean slate system there, you can also use Wayland, and we can make the same comparison there. Is Wayland better than X here? And so when you say, is it Wayland a direct competitor, it in some sense, there's nothing in there that's trying to limit the scope of where you can use Wayland. It's not designed for desktop only or for mobile only, but at the same time, it's a different system, and you can only make the comparison for given use cases, I think.
Well, you know, often when we point up the stack diagram, we see there's a lot of commonality in terms of the sort of underlying stack that we use to implement building on exactly the same underlying technologies that modern X is built on, in terms of sharing resources and
right.
Sharing bugs.
Right. And yeah, so that was one of the early ideas of Wayland, is that We have an infrastructure now that's split up into modular components. All the hard stuff about handling input drivers is done in EVDev. 3D drivers are independent of X now, can be used on KMS. KMS is most settings split out the X server, so we can use that without having to bring up an X server. And of course, on the client side, we've for a long time been moving things out of the X servers and into clients, and the font rendering and Cairo is there's a lot of client-side rendering in Cairo now, and so all this complexity has moved out of clients or out of X server into X server into clients and the underlying stack, and we can now share all that and bring up a different display server. So this is why it's feasible at all to be talking about a different display server, because all of the hard logic is now modularized and available in libraries and drivers. So we can share the driver writer community for 3D. We can share the libraries that like FreeType and Cairo and font config, all that stuff is shareable, and we build on a lot of the same foundation. We just have a modern architecture that only brings us what we need from the display server.
So Owen, you've done a lot of work recently on trying to avoid some of the problems that we have in X, and especially in the compositor, you know, in extensions to enhance the rendering and ensure that we kind of get towards the Wayland mantra of every frame is perfect under X. Do you think that there is still the need for Wayland given the improvements you've been making to the compositor?
There is no individual problem you can't solve in X. I felt a little bit bad with the FrameSync work I did for 3.8 when Rob did a demo of the resizing, in that, you know, taking away the oohs and ahs, because probably people have said, okay, I have GNOME 3.8, my Windows resize like that too. But I mean, the thing is, though we can solve every problem individually, eventually the number of messages and context switches and just pure out hacks that you're doing in there really becomes unmaintainable. And, you know, some things are fairly easy to do within X and some things are really hard. I mean, there are things we're going to get with Wayland that would require whole new X extensions and it would just be awful. You know, I'm really looking forward, as a maintainer of GNOME Shell, to say, I no longer have to talk to the X server whenever I want to do something to display hardware. I can actually just access the display hardware instead of, like, sending everything across this X interface. So it's not that we can't devise solutions there, and I think, you know, the case where we want to devise solutions short-term to give people improved performance before we can switch everybody to Wayland, but, you know, the more and more we keep on doing that, the more and more pain we're suffering from it. So I think it's a great opportunity to clean up all that pain and make some of the new things we want to do, instead of being really hard, be just straightforward and easy.
To give an example of one of those features is the hot corner feature in GNOME Shell, where we had to add X extensions to confine the pointer motion to that corner when you throw the corner up in the upper left corner to bring up the overview. Then we had to add an extension to confine the cursor into that corner and have to make GNOME Shell use it. But with the Wayland-based GNOME Shell, you position the cursor inside GNOME Shell and you can put it wherever on the screen you want it, and you can confine the motion however you want it. So in a Wayland-based GNOME Shell, confining the cursor is just a matter of adding that rule to the cursor motion inside GNOME Shell, and you don't have to go write X protocol and X extensions for that.
Thank you, guys. So are there any questions from the audience? If not, I'm going to nominate Richard, who had one before at the end. So if you could... You need this
mic. But if, just to add to Owen's point, that and to follow up on your elevator pitch question, this is why it's hard to make an elevator pitch for Wayland, because it is one of those cases where with X we have 1,000 paper cuts, and if I have to list 1,000 paper cuts in an elevator pitch, it's going to be more than 60 seconds. But that is the problem, is that we can always fix something in X, but it takes a lot of effort and it takes a lot of knowledge of X, and it's just something that there's too much work involved in each of these fixes.
Okay, I guess same question that you dodged once already, but what's the status with System Compositor and GDM or Western? Are we reusing GDM, GNOME Shell as the system and the session compositor, or what's the plan?
Things like whether or not we're using it for creating any compositor as a system compositor, I think that idea of a system compositor these days has fallen a little bit by the wayside. What's the name of the guy that wrote out that?
David Herman.
David Herman, right.
Yeah.
Sorry. You saw his recent blog post explaining the sort of thinking at the moment is more like having System D basically deal with a lot of the challenges of moving input sort of privileges between compositors, I suppose, for different sessions. If you had different user sessions that you were switching between, you might have different compositors that need to, where you need to revoke privileges of the EvDev devices and the DRM device, where you need to switch between master mode and that's, yeah. So Yeah, sorry.
That's one of the
trade-offs. But you can do. It's possible that you would have a policy, I suppose, that in one between these different session compositors, you have a. I'm starting my fancy switch from one session to another. But the problem is, if you go for the session compositor model, now your input's being routed through another process, and we don't really want that extra latency for all our input. So, looking for there's trade-offs.
And output as well. Wait, you don't page flip to KMS at all. You put a new frame to the system compositor, which is a page flip. So I think the overall idea is to, instead of trying to push a whole new process in between the compositor and the hardware, the idea is to maybe add a few strategic ioctals to EVDEV so we can mute EVDEV devices. Mm. And we already have the feature for KMS where we can take away KMS functionality from a DRM file descriptor. So the idea is to just put the arbitration into a small process so that we don't have a process in the hot path between input and page flipping and so on, but a process that can intervene and disable those input. And as for the sexy part, there's a few things we can do there. That one thing is that when you VT switch away, if we do session switching by VT switching, you can still get that last image on the screen, so you can still rotate that away on a cube or fade something else on top of it. But what you're missing there is you can't have it live animating as you spin away. So you get kind of the last snapshot of what was on the screen, and you can animate that. So when we can get that to a like GDM, for example, it could be the process that does this. So when you switch away from your session.
Thank you, guys. So a very uncontroversial question coming up. So, why does Wayland expect the clients to draw the decorations for the applicator for themselves? Won't this lead to incredibly inconsistent user interfaces? You know, why did you make that decision?
Well, it's there's a lot, there's a lot of reasons, and one of the deep technical reasons is that we want to have the client window be one texture, so we don't want to split what is like on screen at one unit, one atomic unit, into like different textures, so that you have to have decorations same from one texture and content same from another texture. Because when you do rotate or scale down or otherwise transform your window, you end up with aliased edges between these parts of the window. But if you're all sampling from one big texture, so this is really GL. Details of the hardware. But if you do sample from one big texture, that you get bilinear filtering on the sampling. You get fairly nice smooth edges between the window instead of having. From a higher level point of view, I think it also makes sense to have applications present their entire window as one unit that's themed and presented consistently. So when we talk about consistency, there's two dimensions you can say. There's, for one window, do we talk about consistency within that window? Do we want the title bar and the decorations to be consistent with the rest of that window content? Or do we want the title bar maybe be inconsistent with the window contents, but be consistent with other title bars on the system? And that's a trade-off there, I think.
I can comment as well on the higher level cases where it's kind of nice having client-side decorations. If you're working with designers, sometimes they want to have the model be where even some of the application's contents will overlap with where you might want to put the close button for a window for a particular style. When we were working on, I guess it was Mego or Moblin, I suppose, we had the browser UI where they wanted to be able to have the location bar at the top of the browser, but there's no need to have the full Chrome above that as well, just to put a title and a close button when you can just put that to the right-hand edge of the UI. But that means it's within the space of the client's rendering. I guess it's a bit like Chrome, I suppose, where you have the close button, don't you, at the right of all of the tabs. So there are cases where it's by design choice, the UI designers want it that way.
And of course, the consistency is enforced within one toolkit, because it's not something that an application would do. It's a toolkit widget, just like a button and a scroll bar are toolkit widgets. So there's part of the GTK window that there is a toolbar that GTK draws. So for all GTK apps, it's going to look the same. And you and if you run a bang up X term, for example, an X application inside Wayland, that gets a decoration from the X window manager, and looks that would look different from your rest of the GNOME desktop. But X term does look different from the GNOME desktop, so it's probably fair that it gets a different decoration. The biggest concern, I guess, is a consistent interaction. So you don't have like buttons in different places for the Windows. You don't have a close button on the right for X Windows and a close button on the left for GTK native Windows.
So are there any other questions from the audience? Giovanni.
There's actually another problem with the way client-side decorations are implemented right now, is that they include the input area and the shadows. What about if we don't want to show the shadow? For example, in the overview of the GNOME shell, we have a border around the window, and we don't want the empty space around the window texture.
So part of this is that when your application renders shadow and borders and content, you have to annotate the contents that Windows, the compositor, can deal with it correctly. So one thing is when you want to snap, for example, you don't want to snap Windows to where the shadow stops. So you need to annotate the window and say this 32 pixels inside this buffer is actually where the window visibly starts. So when you want to move the window around and snap, that's what the compositor uses. So snapping and moving up against screen borders, all that stuff will be computed based on that content region. And input is a different region where you say this is the region of the window that takes input. So that way you can make that a little bit larger, so you can click a few pixels into the drop shadow to resize, which we do today. And that means it's a different region from the geometry of the window, which is again different from the buffer. Extent.
So, but yeah, you have then three sizes basically.
Yeah.
You have the actual size of the window, which is the visible part, the gray part, opaque part. You have the input area, which stands outside of this because you have the invisible border for dragging. And then you have the shadows, which is the partially transparent part. And from the compositor, you want to reduce, hide, to control that, to treat them separately from time to time.
Yeah. Yes.
And there was one other you didn't mention, which I guess was the specifically opaque region, which is still this separate from the region that represents your window. So if you need to blend certain regions of your window, the compositor wants to limit how much it blends. Blending is kind of expensive, especially considering how many pixels across the screen we're dealing with. It's nice to know which bits are fully opaque. And the client knows that best.
Yeah, but the opaque windows, the opaque region is just an optimization. It does not directly map to the visible area of the window because the window might be transparent inside.
Yeah.
I mean, going further, we have the possibility that you could enhance the Wayland protocol to say, hey, you know, if I'm a GTK client and I'm talking to GNOME Shell, this is what you should be presenting for me in the overview. But then it falls back to some heuristic, such as what's the dimensions with the factoring in the input region and then the clip on there. But hey, maybe for certain applications, if they're very, very small, maybe don't make a lot of sense if the way they're drawn, if they could be drawn better or there's a better graphical representation for them inside the overview, that might be more useful. So you could actually enhance having a specific protocol for specific clients to talk to that particular compositor. Great. Cool. Another audience question?
What about network transparency? Is it possible with Wayland? Would that be too difficult to implement it in the future?
The question is about network transparency.
Transparency?
Network remoting. Remote display.
Yeah, that's entirely possible. The thing that people focus on when we discuss network transparency is whether or not remote rendering is worthwhile. So what X does is that it allows you to send a stream of rendering commands where you say, render this glyph over here, draw a rectangle here, and put this the wide arch over here. And so you send a stream of rendering commands, and it's such a nice concept that everybody can understand that if you have a big buffer and you send a big command, a tiny command to fill that with a blue rectangle, that's a very efficient encoding of the result pixels. But what we have today is that often the rendering command that you have to send to render any given web page or 3D scene is that the data you have to send to render that is often bigger than the final result. So encoding, it's not as simple as most people think. Like there is a trade-off for some scenes. Obviously, the big blue rectangle, it's a lot more efficient to just send that one rendering command. For most realistic use cases, it's especially when you apply compression to the end result, it's not clear that sending the commands is a better choice. And then if we accept that sending the rendering commands is not necessarily a win, then there's really nothing in Wayland that prevents you from doing remote rendering. You have, for every application in the system, you have the window contents, and you can either take that window contents and send those pixels across with some kind of encoding, or you can do a VNC style remoting where you take the entire desktop after compositing all the windows and send that across. And since we know when a client updates its window, we know the damage region, we know exactly what got updated, we're actually in a fantastic position to do remote rendering here, because we have the pixels, we have the information about what changed, and we just need to encode it and send it across. So that's something that can be done. And one of the things about Wayland protocol is that it's optimized for few round trips, and in general, what we're trying to do is when you're animating something, we only want to context switch into the compositor once and then back into the client once per frame. So if you're running 60 frames per second, your application only runs 60 times a second to render the new frame. So that means that we can't just send random events back and forth through that frame. It's all optimized so that at the start of every frame, you receive all the events from the compositor that you need to render that frame. Once you render that frame, you send everything back to the compositor that the compositor needs to know about that next frame. And it turns out that optimization works really well for network transparency too, where every round trip becomes way more expensive. So if we're animating something or we're receiving input and rendering in response over the network, then that same optimization that makes sense in the local case for maybe embedded devices where we have less power, that makes a lot of sense in the remote case as well, because we don't have a lot of round trips over the network. We have a protocol that is very asynchronous and doesn't have any round trips or anything. So the protocol itself is good for remoting. The pixel contents is something we can send across very easily. So there's really nothing in the way of doing remote Wayland. I have a prototype that I've been working on and off. We have an RDP viewer that lets you run a Western instance and then connect an RDP client to that, and you get an RDP view into your desktop. So this is a full desktop type remote display. But the only thing that we're not going to do is remote rendering, because the way Wayland works is that all clients do all their rendering locally, and we just take the result by sharing the buffer. But so the short answer is no, there's nothing in the way of remote rendering, and we will do it eventually, one way or another. Well, even remote rendering, we could have a custom extension in Wayland that lets you create a buffer and then send rendering commands to fill out that buffer with the contents, and then you could use that for remote rendering. So I guess most people's concern is that from saying that it's possible and describing how a solution might work to actually having something that works, that's obviously a lot of work, and there's no guarantee that it will happen. So I think people are concerned that just because it's possible doesn't mean it will be there once Wayland achieves world domination, but it will happen.
So. Thanks, Christian. So, Rob, you're working on enabling GNOME Shell with Matter and all the work you've been doing on Coggle and Clutter and for the compositing side, so that you can have GNOME Shell run as a Wayland compositor and include supporting like legacy applications through X-Wayland. How's that going?
Making pretty good progress. We've Back in 2011, I guess it was a while ago, we did a proof of concept of this, which we demoed at Guadic, where it's running as a what we call a hybrid X and Wayland compositor. So Mutter and Gnome Shell essentially become this display manager. They own kernel mode setting. They own opening. They own the input devices, and we have X Wayland, which is how we deal with compatibility and the fact that Mutter is basically like as much of an X app as you could ever have. So it relies on X Wayland to start with, and it becomes the window manager for X Wayland. So yeah, we've updated the work that we did for the Wayland 1.2 protocol, and one of the changes, apart from just generally cleaning up things since we did that proof of concept, is that we made it so that we support runtime selection of running as a Wayland compositor versus a traditional X compositor, which was to try and make it easier for us to sort of get this code upstream without having anything break. And it would be kind of nice to be able to let distros just ship a build of Mutter supporting both modes. There's some questions as to whether or not this the trade-off of this is worthwhile with the complexity this introduces versus, let's say, you know, just forking and going in two different tracks. But that will be something that we'll figure out probably in the next months or so. So yeah, Neil's been doing work on the input side of things. A bunch of code was split out from Wayland to do as sort of utilities for input, moved into Western, and also we've got the same kind of thing moved into Mutter now. We're looking at opportunities to share code with some of the guys working also on an Enlightenment compositor, so they're looking at splitting out some input handling code that we might be able to use as well as Western. And so then there's a bunch of things to deal with kernel mode setting, and something a bit like the, I don't know if anyone's seen for Western, there is this privilege process called Western launch, which at the moment is the way that we deal with things like BT switching, privileges for DRM, and for dealing with EVDev device privileges. And as we were talking about earlier, we've got this idea that that privilege code is probably going to move into systemd, but in the meantime, we're working to be able to share some of this code between Western launch and also in Gnome Shell, and eventually a bunch of that will either become redundant or some of it will move, say, into systemd. But yeah, I think it's coming along pretty well. Any other things? I guess a nice thing related to that is Giovanni's started helping out actually recently with one of the initial, when we first demoed this stuff, one of the opens at the time was, well, how do we deal with display configuration to make this something you could actually ship in a distro? Is you need to be able to open up GNOME Control Center and figure out how to change your modes for the monitors connected to your machine. And so now we're looking at having a dbus service provided within GNOME Shell or Mutter, and the control center will be able to talk with that. And I mean, you might be able to give more details, but you know, that's the sort of way that's going at the moment. Yeah, coming along nicely. Do you want to add anything?
Thank you, Rob. So are there any more questions from the audience? Oh, yes.
Hello. It's a question that is related with a thread that on the GNOME Shell mailing list some months ago, that it was mentioned that input methods was still, there are still some decisions to take. And for example, I have the mail here. And Jesper was mentioning that it was not clear if the input methods would be something that to be managed by the client or by the compositor. And Jasper is mentioning that one option is just the compositors of GNOME Shell managing the input method doing what the IPL method wants and then send to the client. So, as I said, this was a discussion some months ago. Do you know if there is any conclusion about that?
Yeah, so I mean, there are two proposed. There is a proposed protocol for implementing input methods, and it's currently in the sort of staging area for our protocols. And it comprises of two halves: a protocol that a client implements to talk to the compositor, which is sort of about communicating sort of the textual information that the input method would say. So these are the characters that have been typed, and also stuff for the client to tell the input method about the context that's being used, and then. Conversely, there's a protocol for input methods to communicate with the compositor. And I think the right way forward there would be for GNOME Shell to implement the same input method protocol that we've implemented inside Western, so that we can reuse the same input methods inside the when we're running under GNOME Shell as we're running under other compositors.
And that is working right now. I mean, it's because I think that you say that there are two proposals, or you're meaning that there are two ways to do that.
No, it's not two ways. It's two interfaces. One interface is from the client to the compositor, and I need to look at the patch and find someone who understands input methods to help review and integrate that patch into GTK. That's one issue, and every toolkit needs to implement that. But this means that the toolkits can talk to any compositor and still have input methods. And then there's a input method protocol for the compositor to start to talk to the input method process, which means you can use any input method that implements that protocol with any compositor and then any client. So you can get the multitude of functionality so that you can ensure that you're not having to do special work inside GNOME Shell to support, you know, you don't have to re-implement every input method and every type of input method inside GNOME Shell and similarly specialize it in every toolkit. We can have these protocols to allow us to reuse work.
Yeah, I mean, it's because this is the first question. My second question, I don't know if you remember, I made a question about accessibility last year to the WADEC, to a presentation similar to that, and I just was wondering if the accessibility tools could use this kind of protocols in order to do some of the things that right now they can't do with X. That is, for example, listening for key events, for example, to consume before arriving, going to the client. For example, this is something that the screen reader is doing right now. But right now, in order to properly implement that, the applications need to send the events to the accessibility framework. So the application needs to send a bypass event. The accessibility tool needs to decide if they want to consume or not the event, and then send a bypass event to the application. Something that, I mean, is.
So I think you need to capture every type of you might. So one thing that I didn't quite cover in my talk was that there's the ability to have sort of trusted clients. Yeah. So when the compositor can start a client, and if it forks a client, it can give a particular the socket that it should the file descriptor that it should communicate with inside an environment variable, and therefore it can grant it access to interfaces that wouldn't be available to generic clients. So if you did have a particular accessibility process that you know was going to manage something, and it says, hey, you know, the way it works is by getting key events before sending them to the clients, you could have a protocol that you could create that the compositor would send the key event to that accessibility process and say, hey, should I send this to the client or do you want to swallow it? And that would you could solve some of that. You could prevent the, you could just still ensure the security and the isolation, because it would be a trusted client that the compositor has started and knows to only use that interface for.
Yeah, the idea is not allowed to do that for every accessibility tool. The idea would be, for example, HSPI, the accessibility tool provider. Just one, and then any accessibility tool will be asking for the service to this process. So as far as I understand, what you're saying is that some of the stuff is in place, but a new protocol based on that stuff is needed. Okay.
Yeah. So that's so you've really hit that. You know, this is a great example of where under Wayland we can create specific purpose protocols to solve a problem rather than trying to use whatever mechanism we may have inside X, like walking the window tree or all sorts of maybe racy or, you know, tricky things. We can actually say, hey, we can do this the right way, and we can set it up. Do it the way we need.
Okay, so for example, from the point of view of the people, from the accessibility team, the idea is making a list of all the needs and then trying to, because the problem is that nobody at SRT team has experience with Wayland, so the idea is, I don't know, creating a list of needs and asking for some guidance to do that, or...
But another point about the input method is that, as Rob says, there's two parts to it. One is the protocol from the clients to the company. That's really the important part, and the one that's important to standardize, because that's what all clients and all toolkits will use. The other part is how we split the compositor and the input method. And what we have now is an extension that lets you run the input method as a separate process from the compositor. So when you get text events or key events, we send that out to the compositor, of course, gets input events from the EVDEV, the hardware devices, and gets it before anybody else. So there's nothing any client can do to intercept the keys coming from the hardware into the compositor. So we have full access over the hardware and can intercept any given input event and either send it to the client or not send it to the client. Or we can decide to send that input event to an input method instead of sending it directly to the client. So we have full flexibility in there. And the other protocol that Rob mentioned is the protocol between the compositor and the input method that we use to communicate out to the input method to send key events out, and maybe we get a text event back before to the client. And that's currently a Wayland protocol, and we can restrict access to that, as Rob detailed. But we could also say that could be a dbus protocol. So we want to talk to the input method over dbus. We can do that and then send the result back to the client as a Wayland event. Or we could even build the input method into the compositor if you wanted to. So we could do all the input method in there as a loadable module or a plugin or something. So there's a lot of flexibility in how to structure the input method implementation. And the important part is that we have a protocol between compositor and clients to talk about what clients need to know. So I think we have all the flexibility we need, but we need review and feedback on the input method architecture. So that would be very welcome if you have time to look into it.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. So, you know, in summary, I'd like to ask all the other members of the panel to answer this question. So, what do you think the biggest challenges are facing the Wayland project in a minute, Owen?
Well, I'm not sure I'm qualified to talk about the Wayland project in general. I mean, it has a lot of things outside of GNOME, but I'll talk about the timescale. We just need to have this pretty soon in place because, you know, we want to mature and we want to get there, not like 5 years from now, but really within the next year. We'd like to be, you know, ideally, everybody's sitting here at Quadec next year using Wayland on their laptops. So that's a short time scale. There's a lot of things to make that work. I mean, and that extends from, you know, the basic work of getting GNOME Shell on Wayland going to putting all the pieces back together on the desktop, all the places in the desktop where we use a little bit of X for one thing or another. Many of those have to be converted to Wayland, and it also extends a little bit to the graphics stack. I mean, I think we're pretty lucky with the free drivers is that we already have everything set up so Wayland runs using the same infrastructure we have for the X server. But when, you know, people have, you know, are using NVIDIA drivers on their laptop or something, then there's a bigger challenge there to make that work with Wayland. So we have a lot of pieces we have to put together, and we have to do it quickly, and that's a basic challenge. But there's no one technical problem that's going to, I think, cause us, you know, grief. And just have to get through all of them.
I guess my response would probably be kind of similar, but it's about the focus that it takes to really get something in, you know, a large majority's hands. How do I get GNOME Shell basically working as a Wayland compositor, shipping in a distro that lots of people are using, and what are the biddly, awkward details that we need to figure out, like the systemd integration and GDM integration and those real blockers for actually shipping this for people to play with. Even if it's got some warts, it's just about the basics to get it into people's hands, really, because I think it will snowball once there's more people able to contribute and that it's more relevant to people when you can get this running on your laptop and you can contribute to the toolkit and the application work that's going to build on top of this. It's that kind of detailed work.
Christian. It's so, perfect, right?
Yeah, I think the biggest challenge for Wayland is to get it out there before Android takes over. Because I think really that Android is started out as a phone thing, but it, increasingly we see Android in a lot of embedded systems. And like Wayland has is as I talked before, but the scope of Wayland is not restricted to embedded or desktop. It's really a wide shot at anything display server. But so I see Android kind of scooping up a lot of the cases where you want somebody want like you want a more modern display server. You want support for the embedded chips that's out there. And on the other end of the spectrum, you have X, and which is good enough for people that think X is good enough. So if you think X is fine, you'll stick with X. If you want something modern, you might go with Android in your system, or at least like the Android Surface Flinger parts. And so Wayland is trying to kind of fit into that gap between people that want to improve X and people that just want to go with Android. And I think Android is taking up a lot of these opportunities, and I think if we can get Wayland out there, we have a chance to actually modernize the open source graphics stack that we control, that's part of the community defined infrastructure. We have an option to actually get it out there and provide a new standard for graphics on Linux that's open and community driven, instead of just ceding the opportunity to Google and the Android infrastructure. So I think that's the biggest challenge to Wayland right now. That is a bit of a race there.
Okay, great. Thank you, Christian. So you know, it looks like we'll be heading towards the year of the Wayland desktop then next year. So thank you, everyone. Thank you, Owen, Rob, Christian, for participating in the panel. And I just want to say we do have a BOF session on Monday in room A218. Thank you.